I call the Senate Resources Committee to order. Today is Wednesday, May 3rd, 2023. The time is 3:34 p.m. Please be sure to turn off or silence your cell phones. Committee members present today: Senator Kawasaki, Senator Klayman, Vice Chair Senator Wilkowski, Co-Chair Senator Bishop, Senator Kaufman, and Senator Dunbar. Thank you to Carrie Cooper-Ryder and Amanda Kraft for helping us hold this meeting today. So the only subject on the meeting is Senate Bill 48. This is continuing consideration of amendments to Senate Bill 48, which is the carbon offset program on state land offered by the governor. We had a previous amendment deadline. That was last Friday. We passed an amendment number one unanimously, and we have some additional carbon offset amendments today. In the room, DNR is available for questions. We have Rena Miller, assistant, special assistant to DNR, Mary Gramling. Gramling, is Mary here? Yes, I see Mary, Department of Law, and Chris Orman, Department of Law also. Hi, Chris. Welcome. Online, we have Helgi Eng. He's the state forester. We have Ashley Akodo, director of the Office of Project Management and Permitting. Chris Hess, Deputy Director, Division of Mining, Land, and Water. Jean Pygors, Leasing Lead for Division of Mining, Land, and Water. And Sean Olson, DNR Procurement Specialist. So, on the table today, members should have all the various amendments. There are 11 altogether. And we will start with Amendment Number 2. Amendment number two, I believe, is offered by Senator Klayman. Senator Klayman?
Amendment number two.
I'll object for purposes of discussion. I'll let you explain.
So amendment number two, and the genesis of this was discussions I had primarily with Sealaska, but also some discussions I had with OTNA to find out for Native corporations that have sold carbon credits, to find out kind of how they structured those. And the discussion I had with primarily with Sealaska, when they had first approached entities that would basically package the whole sale for them, figure out how much was out there, get those certified and sell them, the vendor had come in and proposed a 25% commission or fee, and then that wasn't acceptable, and they negotiated that down, I want to say somewhere in the 15 to 20% range. But as a product of that, I thought, well, we really should approach this not unlike private industry. If we actually have a similar resource, we should be looking at similar limits on how much. Because frankly, my view is that if we were going to start offering commissions of 50, 75, 90%, at some point the question would immediately come to me: why are we selling the resource today if it has so little value? And so when I first drafted this amendment, I had used a 25% limit through a lot of discussions with the department. I now am suggesting a 30% limit. That, in my view, gives flexibility for the department to try to negotiate fair commissions on these kinds of sales, but also makes it clear that this is not just carte blanche to the department to go and just sell it for any price, because I think if this is a resource that is valuable enough and there's a market for it, and I think there's questions about that. I think I've expressed to Madam Chair many times that Alaska has the best timber resource for carbon credits is the Tongass, but we can't sell that. And the second best timber resources for carbon credits are all owned by Native corporations because the state, frankly, got third pick when it came to carbon to forest resources. And that's both affected what we can sell for forest resources as timber, but it also affects what carbon credits are available. And it seems to me that we should be putting some meaningful limits so that we don't find ourselves, the department, going in and selling contracts for large amounts. And so I generally understand the administration may not support this, and I probably have some questions for the administration when they present their comments, but my concern is if we don't put some meaningful limits on these sales, we're going to suddenly discover that we sold a bunch of carbon credits and made virtually no money on them. And for what benefit? And I struggle to think that probably isn't a path we should be going down, because I think one of the other questions we should be asking is, as a resource state, what is the best, what we can get our most best value for those resources? Should we, for example, with timber, are we better off having timber sales and selling the timber, or are we better off selling carbon credits? And I think this amendment really focuses that question.
So, Senator Clement, as I listened to your remarks, it seemed to me it went to a lot of different areas, how much we were getting for the carbon credits, but you used the word the commission that was given, right? How much the broker got, I believe that's who you're referring to, as a commission. And yet, and I think that's the purpose of this amendment, but I don't see the word commission in the amendment at all. I see contract, and that's a whole different animal. Should it say under a commission for with a third party? I don't even know what the words are, but
no, the intent would be if the state, instead of doing it on a commission basis, because the contract would include both a commission contract but a services for a specific fee contract. And this, the concept would still apply that we shouldn't be going out and contracting out and spending millions of dollars to recover a resource that, in fact, might not net anywhere, would barely net more than we paid for it. And so the goal is to make it so that the department actually needs to have a realistic picture of what income can come in if they're doing it on a commission basis under the contract, then that provides the limit, and presumably they'd be able to find a contractor for well below 30%. But if the state wanted to try to do this as a fee for service, you would still need to be able to show that that expected revenue was basically 70% compared to the cost of generating the carbon, whatever the sale is for the carbon credits. And
okay.
So the contract is meant to cover all those circumstances.
Thank you. I'm going to ask Ms. Miller to come to the table and comment.
Thank you, Chair Giesel. For the record, Rena Miller, Special Assistant Commissioner's Office at Department of Natural Resources. Thank you for the opportunity to comment on the amendment. We are in opposition to this amendment. There's a concern on a policy level about legislating contractual terms that will show up in commercial agreements. We're concerned that this may, read the way that it is here, could eliminate or reduce our ability to pursue some smaller niche type projects that may require a higher commission from a turnkey type developer because it's less crediting potential to share that through. On a technical level, we can't know the project revenue in advance. I realize a commission style contract would not need to. There's the percent there, right? But this encompasses all contracts. So this would, as written, with a broad reading of facilitates, include commercial and legal expertise that we need at the very beginning or even feasibility of a project. It would include fee for services that are paid for forest inventory or growth modeling well before we know what that revenue is. On that level, it's technically, we don't believe it's technically workable to know that revenue in advance. We certainly respect Senator Clayman's idea that we should be negotiating for a fair commission and for the best interests of the state. And the commissioner, you know, he has sworn an oath to do and act and carry out the responsibilities of the department in the best interests of the state. We think we can do both timber and carbon on the same landscape. We see it truly as a layer of additional that potentially generates additional revenue from the same timber area, right, beyond what's being generated, but in addition to what's being generated by a timber sale. You know, we fully expect to negotiate these, and we would appreciate the flexibility to go ahead and do so without a legislatively or statutorily required contractual term.
Any questions from the committee members? Yes, Senator Kaufman.
Thank you. Through the chair, Ms. Miller, I don't know if you'll feel comfortable with this, but could you just maybe speculate a little bit more on what type of project may need kind of that entry-level care and handling and be a little less efficient than what this value would create?
Senator Kaufman, through the chair, you're talking about the smaller projects that potentially this could preclude. Sure. So our understanding is that, you know, there's a range of 20, 25, up to 30% that's sort of standard right now for a turnkey project developer, right? And these are the developers that you retain that front the project costs, assume the upfront risks of the project, and then are paid through a commission or a revenue sharing kind of agreement based on a percentage of credit sales. Often they carry the credits through to marketing. With the smaller projects, again, you don't have that larger land base, you don't have the larger carbon potential, you don't have the larger number of credits that eventually would be generated in order to support that commission. So sometimes with those smaller projects, the commissions are on the higher end. Senator Clayman mentioned that he had moved this from 25 to 30. I think that probably well encompasses those most of those smaller kinds of projects, but there may be those particular issues in which we need to go further. I think also that commission or that value, just to be clear, the amendment doesn't restrict it to the commission. Any contract can't exceed 30% of the revenue generated. And I think our concern there is not knowing in advance what the revenue is at the time that we have to contract for, approve the work done under, and pay for fee-for-service type contracts.
Thank you. Senator Bishop, did you have your hand up?
I did.
Yes.
So, Ms. Miller, if I just heard you correctly, we could be, with this amendment, potentially we could maybe inadvertently be losing out on more revenue, not in the big picture on a bigger project?
Senator Bishop, through the chair, I think we're talking about smaller projects in this context. So, yes, missing out on revenue, but they would be higher cost to develop potentially in proportion to the revenue generated from them. So they would be revenue to the state. I think, you know, hearing from Senator Clayman, he thinks those project costs should, regardless of whether they're a commission or a fee, there's a limit to how much the state should invest in getting a project to happen. And there's the potential that those smaller projects wouldn't happen under the 30%.
Just to follow up, I'd just like
yes,
to say,
follow up, Senator Bishop.
Thank you. It does have another stop in the Finance Committee, and there is another amendment further down in the package that might address this.
Possibly. I'm wondering, Ms. Miller, I mean, it seems to me this could be written much more specifically. I mean, under a contract with a third party who facilitates a carbon project, the commission levied by the contractor may not exceed 30%.
Senator,
of the revenue generated by.
Yes, ma'am. Chair Giesel, that would take a different approach, and in that instance, you would be saying that if there is a contract that is a commission-based contract, that commission could not exceed 30%. Is that correct?
That's my concern, is that some of these commissions could be significantly high.
Right. As Senator Giesel, through the chair, that would reduce technical concerns. Because I think if we're looking strictly at a commission basis, we don't have to know in advance full-on project revenues. However, I think on a policy level, the department still doesn't support, again, having commercial terms in statute that would typically be in commercial arrangements. We would like to maintain that flexibility so that we feel like we're acting in the best interest of the state.
Sure. At the same time, I share Senator Clayman's concern that we could be ripe for, snake oil salesman? For the comments, Senator Kosa.
Yeah, thanks. You know, just along those same lines, and I recognize that it will go to the Finance Committee, the indeterminate fiscal note kind of gives me concern. And so the program expenses and the revenue requirement, can you just sort of give me a range? Because the fiscal note didn't seem to indicate it, you know, I mean, it is an indeterminate amount. So why is 30% way off scale, I guess, is the question.
Senator Kawasaki, through the chair, I can't say for sure that 30% is fully off scale. I think Representative the maker of the amendment has an amount that he determined based on some conversations with others, right? We know that the range is generally within that 20 to 30% today, the norm, not necessarily the negotiated commission, right? But that's sort of the industry standard, what they're looking for. We hope to negotiate down. At the same time, we don't know what that norm and standard will be in 2 years or in 5 years in this very evolving market. And at that point, I think, as Senator Giesel indicated, it becomes a bit of a policy call.
Yeah, just so that folks who are online might recognize that there's the potential that this legislation will cost, because to fund the future program expenses, it would require the program to cover its own costs. So I guess that's, the larger that, if it's 70%, we're going to be on the hook for a lot more than, say, 30%. So I'm not sure if I feel real comfortable just leaving it that much latitude for the department.
Senator Kawasaki, through the chair, I may have misunderstood your question a little bit. What we're able to represent, I think, as far as potential projects, potential returns on those, are really depicted in the crediting tables that the new report features right now. While we're not looking at doing necessarily those particular projects, they kind of demonstrate and lay that out. In the fiscal notes, we would be looking for program costs that we do ask for general funds for that would support the state standing up its carbon offset program, fielding the interest, deciding which projects to go for. Once you do that, you end up in the world of not program, but actual project costs unique to a project. In the scenario of these turnkey developers, they would cover those project costs up front, and then they would get a fee of the revenue generated through the credit sales, and so would the state. The project expenses in that instance are covered, right? So there's no cost to the state there. The cost to the state would be in the program costs that are represented in the fiscal notes. Those fiscal notes do have indeterminate revenue coming in. Because there is no real certainty of when a project gets up and running and also when it begins generating credits, we felt uncomfortable putting known revenue coming in at a certain date, not knowing exactly which projects and the timing. The bill does include a fund so that as revenue does start coming in from the credit sales, that immediately supplants that general fund for the state positions for the program.
Thank you.
Yes.
Senator Klayman.
So, Ms. Miller, in our discussions specific to the turnkey operations, my understanding, but correct me if I'm wrong, is that at least in the early years of this carbon offset for timber, you expect to be approaching it with these turnkey operations where you get a contractor, and like the entities I spoke with, the private entities, you would expect at least early on you'd be looking for that same turnkey setup rather than having state resources spent doing some of that work. Have I got that right?
Senator Klayman, through the chair, for the initial project, yes, we're not asking for any capital to actually fund the project on our own, and frankly would like the expertise of people that have a great level of experience in this field for that initial project.
And when you say initial project, do you mean just like one small project, or are you looking to get a project that might bring $10, $15, $20 million to the state? I mean, when you say one project, that's pretty vague to me.
Senator Klayman, through the chair, that remains to be seen, the size of an initial project that way. Again, we need to stand that up. We want to hear the interest. We want to look ourselves and see what some of the potential is and go forward with a project. As far as the revenue that project could return to the state, it's going to vary depending on what that project is, the sequestration potential of those trees or other nature and those factors.
Follow up, Senator Klayman.
That's the first project. Would you expect to continue to do a turnkey approach for the first 2 to 3 to 4 projects? Or how do you, one project in terms of what the governor seems to describe this as a big revenue option for the state, it sounds like we're not looking at just one project and it's a 5-year test project and we'll reevaluate in 5 years. It sounds like you're going to be looking. You won't know, my prediction is you won't know the result of the first project before you look at the second project. So how many projects are you likely to approach with a turnkey approach?
Senator Klayman, through the chair, that really is remains to be seen. Part of the part of what we're asking for in one of the fiscal notes includes some capital for commercial and legal expertise that can help us stand up the program and start looking at some of those things where we can determine on a project by project basis how the state's interests can be best advanced, both in contractual terms and in project design, and going forward that way. It could be one, it could be a couple. There are examples, I think, even, you know, you mentioned some of the Alaska Native corporations. We can include terms with a turnkey developer to where part of what they're providing for us is training some of our folks that we have in-house to be able to manage a subsequent project. We'd like to do these cost efficiently. We'd like to do them to generate returns for the state as we're presenting these bills as a revenue-generating mechanism.
Further questions, Senator Klayman?
Maybe just one more. You made some reference to this idea, which I've heard before, that here in these more boreal forest regions, you're going to have these projects that both have carbon offsets and timber sales. And if it's a question more for the state forester, I'm happy to hear from him. But what evidence do you have anywhere in the world where they've been able to do a combination of timber harvesting and carbon credits in the same boreal forest, not to be confused with coastal forests or other areas further south?
Sure. Senator Klayman, through the chair. As far as boreal forest, I might have to lean on Helge Eng, our state forester, for that one. The other public land state project in the United States is in Michigan, and they have continued harvest.
That's not boreal forest.
Not boreal forest, no.
Let's see what the state forester does.
Sure, absolutely.
Mr. Eng, are you there?
I'm here. Through the chair, I didn't hear you ask the question, but
Mr. Eng,
I think the answer.
Could you identify yourself for the record? And I'll have Senator Klayman repeat his question if you'll identify yourself for the record first.
Sorry. Helge Eng, Director of the Division of Forestry and Fire Protection and Alaska State Forest.
Thank you. Senator Klayman, your question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Eng, is there any evidence in boreal forests where they've been able to successfully both have timber harvesting and carbon credits in the same forest?
Through the chair, Senator Klayman, I believe the answer is yes. Either Ontario or Quebec or both have a project that is currently operating. The Scandinavian countries have similar examples of ongoing projects, so I think the answer is yes, and that information can be provided.
Senator Klayman,
how do the forests in those areas you described compare to the forest lands owned by the state of Alaska?
I would think they are quite similar in terms of ecological makeup, species makeup, and ecological productivity.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Eng. Further discussion about the amendment? Yes, Senator Kaufman.
Thank you. Through the chair to Ms. Miller, I think this amendment, it reflects kind of a nagging concern that perhaps some of us have had of the return on a investment. So the ROI on this, if we lock land up and we create the overhead required to administer this and we do contracts, how are we assured that we're actually receiving value from this in the end, you know, from this entire construct, the processes that go around it and the people and effort that's required? And I don't know that this amendment gets us there, but I think that's the concern. At risk of perhaps recounting some of what you've already said, could you just summarize the processes that will be in place in the department to assure that we do receive a good return on investment from this?
Senator Kaufman, through the chair, yes. Not quite a process, but just a very broad umbrella over all of the processes and over the program. The commissioner leads the department. He has taken an oath to act in the state's best interest. I think that that's something that he does not take lightly, and that's important in this context. When we are looking at potential contractors, when we are then looking at potential projects that the contractors have helped us flesh out, we are going to be required to put those projects through a best interest finding. That best interest finding will be an extensive review of a number of different factors, including potential impacts to the state and local economy. I believe revenue to the state is involved at a certain point within the bill that way also. Those things all need to be considered. They need to be evaluated. That finding needs to be publicized. There needs to be opportunity for the public to comment on that. Those comments are received, and that best interest, the preliminary finding, can be revised in accordance with those comments and concerns. It's also an opportunity to, I think, have additional input from, well, not the public, you are the public also, from legislators who have a concern or a point of view on that particular project or the way that it's being considered. So we have those best interest findings. I think even preliminary to that, though, again, is that feasibility analysis. Once you have a project concept, you're going to take a look at that. You're going to look at whether or not you think that there's protocols that you can do this project in accordance with that are in compliance with the laws and the regulations of the state. You're going to make sure that you do run some commercial analysis to make sure that your project costs are within reason, considering the anticipated revenues from those projects. So I think there's a lot of different layers and pieces. And again, that regular dialogue with the legislature, we're before you every year. We count on you for appropriations for our budget to fill these programs, to carry out these policies, and we expect to be accountable to that as well.
So we have 10 more amendments, some of which address return on investment, these kinds of issues. So focusing now on this amendment that's before us, as I said, it seems very broad to me. I would certainly be supportive if it were addressed only at the commission that was being levied by the contractor, but I ask the maker of the amendment clarify what your thoughts are again on this.
So, Madam Chair, actually, in listening to the discussion, in part because the representation is that the early contracts, although she only says one, I suspect it's going to be more than one, I would be very receptive to making a modification in this amendment that makes it, that focuses it only on commission-based contracts. I recognize that in an example in which, say, you had a commission-based contract to get the credits certified and a non-commission-based contract for sale of those credits, that you would be over 30%. If you had a 30% commission to get the certified and then you paid somebody a non-commission basis to sell the credits, you would be over the 30%. But I think because the early projects are likely to be turnkey commission-based projects, I think modifying the amendment so that it only applies to commission-based contracts, I think would serve the purposes of the goal of the amendment, which would be to put kind of put it in what appears to be the traditional marketplace for these kinds of contracts.
Gotcha. Do you wish to suggest language?
I think Madam Chair, you may have said language that may have been
misaligned. Okay, so what I had suggested is under a contract with a third party who facilitates a carbon offset project, the commission levied by the contractor may not exceed, et cetera, 30% of the revenue generated by the carbon offset project. I don't know how well that's worded, but you're the attorney.
Well, you're just as good at this as I am.
Senator Bishop.
Would the maker of the amendment be willing to pull the amendment and work on crafting the amendment to get it correct, and because it's going to finance and it could be offered in the finance committee?
I'm happy to actually move it to the back of the stack.
Yeah.
And I'll see if I can make a few adjustments in the language. And
gotcha.
We can bring it up.
All right. So we will set amendment number 2 aside for consideration later. And that brings us to Amendment number 3 by Senator Wilikowski. Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move amendment number 3.
And I'll object for purposes of discussion. Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is a transparency amendment, and the amendment requires the department to annually publish a report on the state's leasing of land for carbon management purposes, as well as annually publish a report for contracted carbon offset projects that are intended to produce carbon credits. It has a list in, you can see from page 1, starting at line 11, what the reports will require. We've worked extensively with the department to craft this language, and my understanding is they do support this amendment. And correct me if I'm wrong, Rena.
Senator Wilikowski, through the chair, thank you. Yes, we support a reporting requirement. We want to be accountable and appreciate the senator bringing this forward. I did promise that I would mention on behalf of our staff that it will take a not insignificant amount of staff time, but we're prepared to do that, to have that ongoing accountability and transparency.
Members of the committee, is there further discussion? Senator Kaufman.
Thank you, through the chair, to the amendment sponsor. Would, looking at this, would this be able to be combined? I noticed the dates are the same. Is there any sort of efficiency that could be gained? And is there anything preventing that?
Chair, could you, which dates are you referring to?
Well, the report dates are the same. They're, I see February 1. And I'm just wondering, could we foresee these reports being a singular report rather than two different reports?
Senator Wilikowski?
Could. I don't know that that creates a whole lot more work or less work. It's just, I think, adding a new page. I mean, there's some somewhat distinct things that we're asking for. And this goes to finance, and I want to keep it as efficient as possible, and I know we're I'm trying to be efficient with our time too, but this is the language that we drafted in consultation with the department. They're okay with the draft, and I'm happy to work with the finance committee to make it even more efficient if this committee agrees to send it forward.
Did you have further comments, Senator Kausa or Kaufman?
No, ma'am. Thank you for that. I'll support the amendment.
Further discussion on amendment number, well, it's actually numbered number 3. Yes, amendment number 3. Further discussion? If there's no further discussion, I will remove my objection. Is there further objection to amendment, which is numbered number 3B, bravo, 11? Seeing none, amendment number B11 has been adopted. That takes us to what is numbered amendment number 4, or bravo, dot 12. It's offered by Senator Wilikowski. Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you. This move amendment number 4.
I'll object for purposes of discussion. Senator Wilikowski.
Okay, we're aware from speaking with the department that it's possible that carbon management and offset projects could occur on land that is also leased for oil and gas production. If a company that's involved in carbon management or offsets is also an oil and gas producer, this amendment simply ensures that projects or activities taken up for the carbon management or offset purposes do not get counted as lease expenditures and potentially allowed to be deducted from a company's production tax value, and reduces the taxes that are owed to the state. Again, worked with the department on this. We changed our language pretty significantly, and my understanding is the department does not oppose this amendment either.
Thank you, Senator Wilikowski. It looks like the actual content of the amendment is on page 4 of the amendment. Ms. Miller, comments?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Both DNR and Department of Revenue have no objection to the amendment. It's a policy call.
Gotcha. Further comments from committee members on amendment number 4, bravo 12? Seeing none, I will remove my objection. Is there further objection to amendment number 4, bravo 12? Seeing none, this amendment is also adopted. That takes us to amendment number 5, which is bravo 20, offered by Senator Wilikowski. Senator Wilikowski?
Move amendment number 5.
I'll object for purposes of discussion. Senator Wilikowski?
Thank you. This amendment deals with a concern that a leasee for a proposed carbon management project could sit on a lease indefinitely and never utilize the land, which could prevent the state from realizing revenue and prevent other lessees who would be using the land from leasing it. It essentially holds the lessee's feet to the fire. There was a similar provision that was in the bill. This tightens it up. It adds work requirements, including benchmarks, and requires that if these benchmarks are not met, progress is not met, then the commissioner shall terminate the lease. Again, consulted with the department. My understanding is they would like to change one word, and I'd ask the department if they could comment on that, Madam Chair.
Ms. Miller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Senator Wilikowski. We have absolutely no objection to the amendment. We appreciate you working with us to kind of build out the provisions related to a termination. A small change that we'd appreciate on line four would be changing the word work to the word performance, so that these would be performance requirements instead of work requirements. Our Mining, Land, and Water Division staff who would be carrying out this part of the legislation would felt that was more to their more within their understanding and scope into what your policy is.
Ms. Miller, distinguish the word performance requirements versus work requirements.
Sure.
How is that different?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Performance requirements are something that they're more familiar with using in other leasing contexts. Work has that connotation of being a very hands-on thing that produces a very tangible and immediate result, maybe planting a tree, building a road, whereas performance can mean a number of other things also. It seems to encompass a broader array of activities that may not have that tangible work relationship.
Very good. Thank you. Other comments? Senator Kaufman.
Thank you, through the chair. I just wanted to mention that KPIs, key performance indicators, is pretty much industry standard language for measuring the value produced by work. Thank you.
Further comments related to Amendment B20? Senator Wilikowski.
There's no other comments, Madam Chair. I support the change. And I appreciate the department working with us. We just met 2 hours ago on this. We just got this late to go over this latest version. I don't have any objection to changing work to performance. It seems like a reasonable request. And I don't know if I could do an amendment to Amendment 5 to change the word work in line 4 to performance, if that would be appropriate, Madam Chair.
That would be great.
I would make that amendment.
Is there any objection to the amendment to the amendment changing the word on line 4 from work to performance? I see no objection. Therefore, that amendment to the amendment has been adopted.
I was expecting Senator Kaufman to object.
I held my tongue. I want to keep performance indicators.
Let's stay focused. Is there further discussion about the now amended amendment? Seeing none, I will remove my objection. Is there further objection to amended amendment number 5B20? Seeing none, amended amendment number B20 has been adopted. Takes us to amendment number 6, which is B as in Bravo 19. This is offered by Senator Wilikowski. Senator Wilikowski.
Move amendment number 6.
I'll object for purposes of discussion. Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This amendment, okay, so just go back a little bit on the bill. The bill, for the most part, exempts the department from the state procurement code. I have always, since I've been here, been reticent to allow exemptions from our state procurement code. Procurement code is there for a reason. We want transparency. We want fair competition. We don't want sole source contracts, typically as a state. That's just tends not to be good public policy. This bill creates this loophole. Well, not a loophole, but it completely removes the department from the procurement process. And so the next several amendments will be dealing with that. And my concern is, and I'm generally very supportive of the bill. I think this has exciting prospects. However, I'm also concerned that we're potentially passing a bill that will provide little notice to the public, little opportunity or little notice for public comment. Little transparency will allow the potentiality of sole source contracts, potentially for extremely large money, potentially hundreds of millions of dollars, potentially locking up millions of acres of land. And so that makes me nervous. And I know we have commissioners who take an oath of office to work in the state's best interests. And I also know that I'm sure that there were commissioners in the past who approved seafood processing plants and grain silos who thought they were acting in the state's best interest. And I'm not saying they weren't, but I'm just saying that more eyes, more public process is a better thing. Also recognizing that we want to give some flexibility. So the next few amendments, Madam Chair, I state that just as a preface for the next few amendments, trying to sort of find that balance between giving them, the department, flexibility and protecting the people of the state and protecting our opportunity to have oversight. So what this amendment does is it simply gives DNR the option to use the procurement code and announce that they're using the procurement code. Simple amendment. My understanding is the department does not object to this amendment.
Ms. Miller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The department believes it unnecessary, but has no, technically unnecessary, but has no objection.
Thank you, Ms. Miller. Is there further comment on Amendment Number 6, numbered Bravo 19? Seeing no other comments, I will remove my objection. Is there additional objection to Bravo 19? Seeing none, Amendment Number 6, numbered Bravo 19, has been adopted. This takes us to amendment that's numbered 7, Bravo 22. By Senator Wilikowski. Senator Wilikowski.
Move amendment number 7.
I'll object for purposes of discussion. Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you. I think this is an important amendment. This amendment is meant to address a problem in the bill that the department has, as I mentioned, exempted itself from public notice and an opportunity to solicit other competitors for leasing land that will be used for carbon management purposes. Under current law for leases, there is a notice requirement. There is a requirement for competitive bidding. Under the bill right now, a person or entity could propose to the department to lease our land and make hundreds of millions of dollars in carbon management, and the public would have never known the lease was awarded or wouldn't, and for what purpose. The lease wouldn't have been put through public notice or opportunity for competitive process. If we allowed this bill to pass without reining this in, then that would lead to grave concern on my part, Madam Chair. I understand the department does not support this, and I'd like to get their position on the record. And my understanding also is that they're committed to continuing to work on it. They've provided some alternative language that we continue to work on. But I'd like to hear from Ms. Delbert, if I could, Madam Chair.
Absolutely. Ms. Miller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. But we are opposed to this amendment as drafted, but we would like to work together on the concept of requiring notice on receipt of an application to lease state land for a carbon purpose. We believe that that is important, as Senator Wilikowski, referenced in generating competitive interest and giving people that opportunity. There is a process in the bill already for how competing leases would be evaluated against each other and awarded. And there is, to be clear, the requirement for an interest finding in awarding a lease that does require public process. It's not explicitly stated in the bill, but it is woven within the rest of the Alaska Land Act statutes, and we can have Jeannie Piggers, our leasing lead for Division Mining, Land and Water, talk more about that if you would like. So again, we're happy to continue working on something that deals with that initial notice on an application. Very much would like to do that with the committee or future committee.
Thank you, Ms. Miller. Let's hear from Jean Piggers, leasing lead, our Division of Mining, Land, and Water. Ms. Piggers?
Yes, hello. Thank you. For the record, my name is Jeannie Piggers, Northern Regional Lands Manager and Leasing Policy Team Lead for the Department of Natural Resources, Division of Mining, Land, and Water. If I understand, the question is that you would like to hear a little bit more about the best interest finding and the processes that are used that provide public notice prior to the issuance of a lease. Is that what I understand you're asking me at this time?
That is accurate, yes.
All right, thank you. And through the chair, the best interest finding process for leases currently is the same process that would be used for carbon bill projects if this bill is passed. And it's a very intensive and extensive process that involves initial review of an application when it comes in the door. It is also involves coordination, close coordination with the applicant, and outreach to agents, to our fellow agencies that have expertise in the area, to identify other uses or other resource considerations that need to be taken into consideration before a proposed lease is issued. And this involves looking closely at other multiple uses of the area, other potential resources that might be developed that we'd have to consider, the potential compensation method that we could use in working through a lease. And all of these types of things are looked at closely. When they are pulled together into a preliminary decision for a best interest finding, the preliminary decision lines out the area plan information, the land use, the pros and cons of the project, the potential impacts from the project, any alternatives that were considered, and all of the sort of information that the department considered closely before proposing. This is called the preliminary decision, and this decision then is posted and put out for public notice, so that members of the public, the applicant, or anyone who's interested can take a look and provide comments. There's a state statute that provide guidance on exactly how public notice is to be conducted to ensure that it reaches the right people and that it's broad-reaching and comprehensive and provides the right information. Public notice does have to be a minimum of 30 days, but it oftentimes can be a bit longer. When the public notice period is done for a best interest finding under a preliminary decision, the comments that are received are used by the department staff to look at and reevaluate to see if there's any changes that need to be made to the project or things to be considered. And when these comments are reviewed, a final finding and decision is written unless there's a need for a substantial change. And the final finding and decision incorporates both a review of the comments and the responses that the department has to them and puts forth the department's final administrative decision before issuance of a lease. So there's plenty of opportunity for public comment and a thorough review of those comments and evaluation of them prior to a final finding being done. I'd also add that once a final finding is issued, there is a statutorily required and regulation-driven process of administrative appeal that is available to anyone who takes issue with the final result of a final finding. And I would defer to Rena to give further details on what she had mentioned earlier about the department's desire and wish to continue working on perhaps some additions to the language for this amendment. And Rena, please jump in and let me know if you would prefer to speak to this. But I do know that for our current leasing, under our current statute, we also provide prior to the actual writing of a preliminary decision, we do go out and do solicitation of interest notice. And prior to that, which gives people an opportunity who may have an alternative project or competitive interest, the opportunity to comment and let us know if they have competitive interest. Now, under our current leasing situation, if we do receive competitive interest during that solicitation, that results in the need for an auction bid. Even though the current carbon project bill exempts these types of leases from competitive auction, that doesn't mean we can't still pursue some additional notice for solicitation of competitive interest that would then be evaluated under the conditions of the current bill. And I'm available for you to ask me questions, or if necessary, if Rena, you'd like to jump in and add anything or correct anything, I'm available for that.
Thank you, Ms. Piggers. I am going to go next to Senator Kawasaki.
Yeah, thanks. I don't know who can answer this, but can you tell me, I know that the length of the lease sort of was a question, that 55 years being a lengthy period of time. Can you just tell me how much time most, or like a lease for, say, a trapping cabin or an oil and gas lease or some other lease generally is? I know that, you know, the railroad has those 90-year leases, but they come before the legislature for so can you just talk to me about why it's okay?
Thank you, Senator Kawasaki. Ms. Miller, do you prefer to answer that, or would you like Ms. Piggers to do that?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Piggers is an excellent resource for that question.
Excellent. Ms. Piggers?
Yes. Thank you. And through the chair, I'm hesitating a little bit to come up with some good examples for you. Essentially, for a typical lease, for our typical leases in the division, 55 years is the top end. A lot of them are usually issued anywhere between 25 and 30 years, but we do have some 55-year leases. I do want to be clear that I think a couple of the examples that you put forth to me, trapping cabins are typically done under permits, which is a different type of authorization. And I am not an expert in oil and gas leases. Those are a different type of lease. So I want to make sure that when I'm giving these answers, that I'm not speaking to those particular things. Other types of examples of leases, like an industrial site lease for, you know, a staging area up in Dead Horse, or a, you know, a shop lease, things of that nature, they can be issued for 55 years. We tend to usually issue them for a term of 25 to 30 in order to evaluate the nature of what we think might be coming up in the future. And they also oftentimes are based a bit on what we see for the life expectancy of infrastructure. So keep in mind that a lot of our leases currently are based on development and have infrastructure. And the life of the infrastructure sometimes plays in what makes the most sense for a good term. 55 years, though, is consistent with our current leases.
Madam Chair.
At least for the top end. And carbon management leases fall within, are along the same lines as other leases as far as what the top end would be.
Thank you, Ms. Piggers. Senator Wilkowski, did you want to comment?
Well, just to say, Madam Chair, as I mentioned earlier, I am withdrawing this amendment. And I really appreciate the testimony, I getting it on the record. We just received a draft from the department today, I believe it was today, and I think we can come up with a compromise on this. I think we're close, so with that, I'll withdraw the amendment, Madam Chair.
Very good. So Amendment B-22 has been withdrawn. The next amendment is number 8. This is numbered Bravo 21. It's offered by Senator Wilkowski. Senator Wilkowski.
Move amendment number 8.
I object for purposes of discussion. Senator Wilkowski.
Thank you. And I want to be respectful of members' time. I intend to withdraw this one also. We just met with the department today. We've been trying to craft language. I just wanted to get it on the record. The concern that we're trying to address here again is the procurement code exemption. And what we were trying to do with this was to say you can have a procurement code exemption, but you don't need one for goods or supplies. There's no reason to have a procurement code exemption for papers and pencils and office supplies and things like that, in my opinion. And I don't know that the department opposes that. The concern came up under services, and we had said services where the value of the contract exceed $500,000. We recognize that term could be ambiguous. And so, again, this was an attempt to prevent sole source contracts. We think the language can be modified. I'd just like to briefly hear, Madam Chair, if I could, from the department. My understanding is they intend to continue to work with us and understand that there could be some changes made to tighten this up.
Thank you. Ms. Miller.
Madam Chair, thank you. Senator Wilkowski, yes, we're happy to continue working with you on this towards that concept of requiring procurement code processes for goods and supplies.
Thank you. Senator Wilkowski.
I'll withdraw amendment number 8.
Thank you. So amendment number 8, which is numbered Bravo 21, has been withdrawn. That takes us to amendment number 9. It is numbered Bravo 16. It is offered by Senator Wilikowski. Senator Wilikowski.
Move amendment number 9.
I'll object for purposes of discussion. Senator Wilikowski.
Okay, thank you. And this deals with, again, the issue of public notice, public comment. This amendment is an attempt to at providing some sort of notice to the public that there's a possibility of a carbon offset project contract and to solicit other proposals that would provide some sort of competition. Initially, under Section A, the state would notice to the public that its land is available for these purposes. This would happen periodically when the state thinks it would be in the best interest of the state. I would suggest that this part is probably not objectionable to the state, or the department rather. Regarding the contracts, though, this is a big concern for my office, for me, because of the bill's blanket exemption from the procurement code. And the process that I'm proposing here would require the department to present preliminary written findings that a contract that has been proposed to the department is in the state's best interest, and then allow for public comment. This lets other interested parties make similar offers and see which one is in the best interest of the state. The department must consider the items under subsection E, which include the cost to the state for the contract, future revenue to the state. It would also allow multiple contracts to be entered into if more than one are in the state's best interest. And I think we need something like this in the bill so we know who are receiving contracts and providing for public comment and competition so that it's not just sole source contracts. This, I think, is a critically important amendment. We're at opposition on this. The department does not support this. I know that. And I think this is an important amendment that needs to stay in the bill and perhaps get modified in finance. But I think this is important to have this in here, Madam Chair.
Ms. Miller, comment?
Thank you, Madam Chair. To the committee, the department, I think, really acknowledges some of the same attributes of the procurement code as being really important to the state, the need for transparency, to generate competition, but also to provide some kind of due process. We just want to lay that out there. Senator Wilkowski is correct. I don't think we have much objection to A, right? And frankly, in E, beginning on line 21, I really appreciate the work he and his staff did laying out a means to evaluate contracts and proposals. It's not strictly a cost basis like the procurement code would be. That's one of our big concerns with the procurement code in this context. However, we have this structured in a way, unfortunately, that creates some unfair advantages that leads us to question kind of the integrity of that process. Instead of noticing that someone wants, generally, we have a proposal before the department to enter into a contract to do a carbon offset project on X land. Who else is interested? Solicit competition. This one requires us to do a preliminary written finding about that contract being in the best interest of the state, and then exposing that entire finding with every detail and saying, this is now available for competing offers. The procurement code doesn't work that way. Different offers are frankly kept confidential until something has been awarded. So again, I think there's some work we can continue to do on this and would very much like to continue to do on this conceptually. But I think this language is not quite workable. It's akin to telling one potential contractor that he needs to show all his cards and everyone else getting to see them and not showing any of theirs, and then asking us. We have due process concerns on that level, frankly.
Thank you, Ms. Miller. Other comments from committee members? Senator Kaufman.
Thank you. Through the chair to the bill, or to the amendment sponsor, on page 2, line 2, it states, if the department determines that more than one proposal is in the best interest of the state, the department may accept more than one proposal. I'm just wondering mechanically how that might work in this sense, and what that provision, why it was included.
Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And what I thought I heard from Ms. Dubridge was that they were not didn't have a problem with this section, but maybe I misheard that. The idea is where
there is an exemption, a blanket exemption from the procurement code. And so we're trying to rein it in so that there are not sole source contracts. And so the way the process would work is if there's more than one proposal, we have tens of millions of acres of land that are available in the state, and perhaps we'll get multiple proposals. This is the idea behind this, is to generate in the state's best interest competition, transparency. The state could enter into multiple proposals, because you could envision the state putting out and saying, we would like to solicit contracts for Haines State Forest, for example, which is one of the areas we've heard. It's a large area. Maybe a company wants to do a portion of Haines State Forest, and maybe another company wants to do the rest of the Haines State Forest. So you can envision a scenario where it could be multiple contracts. Maybe there's five different companies. Maybe there's companies that specialize. Maybe there's some tundra in certain parts of areas, and boreal forest in other parts. And maybe there's companies that specialize in different areas. So that's what we're trying to get at. I thought I heard that the department was not have a concern with that, but maybe I could hear from the department, Madam Chair.
Well, first of all, Senator Kaufman, did that answer your question?
I believe so, but I wouldn't mind hearing.
Yes, we will go to the department. But you're good at this point?
Yes, ma'am.
Ms. Miller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Kwilikowski, you understood correctly. We appreciate that flexibility for exactly the reasons that you stated. Again, we're talking about in an instance where the state's sort of soliciting for a particular area rather than advertising someone's proposal that's come before us, trying to accommodate all potentiality here.
Further comments, Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Question for the department. I'm trying to understand, ultimately, this contract and what the state is doing is we're seeking, maybe not maximum, but very significant transparency, right? And so I'm thinking back to when we sold MLMP at the assembly, for example. We sort of said we want to sell MLMP, and we got, I think, four or five bids, and there's a lot of detail in those bids, all public. But what I'm hearing from you is that when someone approaches the state, they have some, I don't know how you define it exactly, proprietary information or something like that, and they don't want that revealed. And so what I'm curious about is it a one-off, or could it be an iterative process? That is to say, they come with a proposal, then we say we've received this proposal, and other people come in and try to lowball them, essentially, or whatever the term would be, try to outbid them. And then you give them another bite at the apple. Can you beat this? Is that how this process works, or can that be how this process works?
Senator Dunbar, through the chair, this process being the one via the amendment or in the bill currently, under the bill currently?
I guess both.
Senator Dunbar, through the chair, I would like to just – I don't read that opportunity in here to return and show – other bids and ask people if they can beat them. But I would like to, I believe Chris Orman is in the room with the Department of Law, and I think that he might be able to provide a little bit more of a nuanced response.
Mr. Orman, welcome.
Thank you all.
If you would introduce yourself for the record and give your response.
I will do my best. Chris Foreman, Department of Law, Natural Resources Section. Thanks for allowing me to be present before all of you. It's better than seeing you all on TV. I think, so as far as the amendment and looking at the amendment, I agree with Ms. Miller. I don't know right now how it's been drafted that the language allows for that. And if that's the direct legal question, that's really what I'm going to answer in that regard. Currently, how it's drafted, as I am, I think the plain language of the statute, which is what a court would look at, a court would analyze the plain language and go from there. Then they would potentially pull up these types of hearings to try to determine what the intent was, right? But looking at the plain language and the way this is drafted, it really starts with someone's coming before the department and is presenting a proposal and wants to do some project on state land, wants to undertake that project. At that point, presumably, DNR has negotiated or undertaken something and has now prepared findings and determined this would be appropriate. At that point, then, it's being made public. So it's not as if, as this is currently drafted, that there's a solicitation process at the beginning of let's hear all of the potential interest in this area and solicit interest in that area, and then determine what would be in the best interest of the state based on the proposals presented. A good way to maybe think about this, and maybe the best way for me to frame it, because I'm a lawyer and I'm always thinking about other statutes, is there's something similar to the solicitation process in 3805-070D. So currently for leases and the potential for leasing, there's this solicitation process where the state presents out and goes out to the public and says, let's hear your proposals, and then determine and sift through those at that point. I think the concern here, and I do, I think about when I play my kid, Jen Rummy, and he's like, I want to see your hand. And I'm like, that's cheating. No, you know, but joking aside, is that the way this is currently drafted, the proposal, someone's proposal that's been presented now becomes public, and then you end up having competition based on that one proposal. And the complications that could arise from that, I think, are what's been addressed and expressed.
Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's an interesting way to frame it. And I don't think that there is any, I don't want to speak for the maker of the amendment, but I don't think there's any issue of when we go out to the public and say, hey, we're soliciting bids, we get a bunch of bids, that's legitimate. But it's not hard to imagine someone connected to someone in our government, and, you know, in the future coming and, you know, bringing this kind of proposal and not being subjected to competition, and sort of similar to the metaphor made before. What if someone had come to Anchorage and say, hey, we want to buy MLMP, here's our proposal, and then Anchorage was prevented from going out and seeking other proposals on selling that asset? That to me doesn't make a lot of sense. So I guess I'm if someone wants to be that proactive to bring a proposal forward like that, it doesn't strike me as odd that would set off a chain of events where other people got to at least explore the ability of outbidding them.
Ms. Miller?
Sure. If I may, Senator Dunbar, through the chair, I think what you're talking about is soliciting competitive interest, and we have already expressed the department's support for that concept. What we're concerned about in the amendment is the way that it unfairly positions that front offerer, because their initial interest is put on full display for any additional parties, where those parties don't need to be showing all of their full interest. I think even in a standard procurement process under the procurement code, there's some protection until something is actually awarded. So you're soliciting interest, and again, we think that competition's good. But we want to be fair to all comers, including the first person to put an idea out there. We think that's really an important value.
Senator Bishop.
If I hear you correctly, Ms. Miller, you're trying to, you're soliciting interest, and I hear what you're saying. So you say the first proposal, went out and did the due diligence, really did the legwork, went acre by acre, counted the trees, doing the whole ball of wax, right? And proposal number two is just sitting back with a two-person shop that hasn't done anything, but look at the first guy's proposal and pencil whip it and throw X on it and is awarded the proposal. Is that kind of what you're saying?
Senator Bishop, through the chair, I think, that's an example. We would be likely to also evaluate some of their experience and qualifications, but a shady operator can, that whether they can actually do things for the amount that they're saying that they can do. They've seen a number out there now. They've seen the project details. The preliminary interest finding that we have to publish could be extensive in detail, and that can expose a lot of that work that first party has done in a way that can be disadvantageous. Yes.
Then follow up.
Senator Bishop.
Then to Senate, the maker of the amendment, I think I understand where he's trying to go, and then I go back to the GEA gas line days, and if we're looking to have some oversight, maybe we could talk about a firewall between where the legislature has a firewall and we have signed the document that the legislature then could look at those. Senator Wilkowski, he knows where I'm trying to go here.
Senator Wilkowski.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Great discussion, and this is why we do this. I think there's areas of agreement. There are obviously areas of agreement. There's some areas of disagreement, and if you'll agree to continue to work with my office to figure out, in the interest of time and moving this along, if you're willing to work with my office to try to come up with some language that we can agree on, I'll withdraw the amendment if you're willing to do that, Madam.
Senator Wilkowski, through the chair, we would appreciate that opportunity, and we'll follow through on that in conjunction with working with the future committees as well.
Then I'll withdraw the amendment, Madam Chair.
With that, the maker of the amendment has withdrawn amendment number 9, which is numbered Bravo 16. That takes us to amendment number 10, numbered Bravo 15, offered by Senator Wilkowski. Senator Wilkowski.
Okay, I move amendment number 10.
I object for purposes of discussion. Senator Wilkowski.
Okay. I think this gets to a lot of the concern I think that you're hearing is oversight and the fact that there is an exemption from the procurement code and there's very little oversight, and this would provide legislative oversight and approval for contracts over $1 million. And again, there's the potential for massive no-bid sole source contracts that are done with very little notice, very little public scrutiny, very little transparency. I'm not saying that will happen, but I'm saying the potential exists. And I'm not saying this governor would ever do that, but I'm saying I don't know who the future governor will be. And I think there's got to be a checks and balance. There's got to be a check and balance on this at some point. And so this amendment would require approval for contracts over $1 million. We've heard there are potentially contracts worth hundreds of millions of dollars that are out there. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Wilkowski. Having reviewed a legal opinion, the comment was that this would conflict with the separation of powers. And yet at the same time, we do approve royalty in kind contracts. Which also, according to this legislative legal memo, also falls into this separation of powers, which we violate with royalty in kind approvals. But it does seem analogous to a royalty in kind approval. Further comments from committee members about amendment number 10? Ms. Miller, comment on it?
Thank you, Madam Chair. The department does oppose this. There are concerns, again, about the separation of powers and the legislature having direct authority over contracts that the administration enters into. We see a lot of an additional concern with the structure of that legislative approval and the potential for the legislature making conditional approvals, essentially renegotiating terms of a contract in granting its approval. We find it challenging to see how we can attract those kinds of partners with a contract that's subject to the legislature potentially adding conditions, renegotiating terms. We are generally talking about a political process in a commercial arrangement that can add uncertainty, which can add risk, which can add cost. And we believe that some of the reporting requirements, in addition, the commitment to work forward on some level of that, of a procurement process, as noted in the last amendment, that provides some oversight through the contracting process is responsible.
Thank you. Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Those comments reminded me a bit of a discussion we had here earlier about certain pristine waters where the DNR said, oh, no, this has to go to the legislature because you guys are less political than the passage. to approve. But to me, what strikes me about this amendment is that $1 million in these kind of contracts doesn't strike me as a very large amount. That is, it seems like many, many, many contracts would come to the legislature for approval. And so I was wondering if the department has a position on setting aside the separation of powers issue, which the chairwoman has always already pointed out we do in other contexts. Is there a more realistic number that would cause you less issue, or it's like it's not going to be every contract, but some of the higher end contracts? What would be a number above $1 million that would be more acceptable to the department?
Ms. Miller. Senator Dunbar, through the chair. Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't know that there is a number that's more acceptable based on the concerns that we articulated. I think the additional concern with setting a number is actually similar to another discussion we had earlier today here, in that the total revenue to be generated by a project is not an absolute known fact. It's contingent on a number of things happening and occurs in the future. And so when you're looking at setting a number, I think that that's a concern that's involved there. The amendment does mention the value of option provisions. We're not entirely clear what those are. It's not a term that I think is standard in the project development contracting arena, other than in the most general sense of, as we all know it, to be an option to buy something in the future at a given price point or to not buy it. So we, assuming that also relates to the dollar value.
Thank you. Does that answer your question, Senator Dunbar?
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Further questions? Did you have a comment, Senator Kaufman?
No question. Thank you. Through the chair, Ms. Miller. In the weeds, down on page one, line 20, cost to the party over life of contract includes value, et cetera. It looks like a limited amount of things. I'm just wondering, would that be comprehensive to, if we were to do this to fulfill the purpose?
Senator Kaufman, through the chair, I think there's a lot of nuance here. I think there's a question as to what the cost means when the state is not expending money in the turnkey concept. It's more of a commission or a revenue split of a future amount, right? So I would have some concerns over the language right there and how that's structured. As far as known or reasonably foreseeable, you know, contract extensions, additional terms, I don't know that those are really knowable in terms of a dollar limit. We could certainly make a best stab at that at the time, whether or not we feel that contract is made for a sufficient time period to serve the needs. Does that answer your question?
I believe so. Thank you.
Further questions, Senator Wilkowski?
Madam Chair, could a couple points. I don't think this violates the separation of powers because this isn't the legislature inserting itself into a contract. This is legislative approval of a contract before it is agreed to. I think that's within our right. We have a constitutional obligation to manage our natural resources. That is in the Constitution, and it gives that duty to the legislature. I think this is us managing our resources. This is, again, tens of millions of acres potentially. It's hundreds of millions of dollars in contracts potentially. This is a check and balance. And I would move that we, Madam Chair, a friendly amendment that we increase this amount so that it provides for legislative approval for contracts over $10 million. I think Senator Dunbar raised a good, valid point. It's a $10 million contract. That's a substantial amount of contracts. There's not an intent to say, you know, we don't want to get involved in the particular in-house operations that you have. $10 million is a very significant amount of money. So I would move that an amendment that we increase $1 million to $10 million on line 7 and also on line 9.
So the motion has been made for an amendment to this amendment to increase the number to $10 million on lines 7 and 9. Is there objection? Seeing no objection, that amendment to this amendment has been adopted. Further discussion on amendment number 10, numbered B15.
Comment?
Yes, Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I agree with the maker of the amendment. I'm mixing apples and oranges, but at the finance table, we do legislative approval on bargaining agreements all the time for 30 million, 40 million, you know, contracts. And as I told some of my finance members in the past, it's not our job to negotiate that contract. That's admin's job and labor's job. Our job is to vote it up or vote it down. And so I'm mixing apples and oranges here, but I support this amendment.
Senator Klayman.
Just on the topic of the amendment, particularly with the amendment from 1 million to 10 million, we have legislation involving additional insured coverage on what are described as large contracts. which is working its way through both bodies. And the so-called large contracts is a $50 million contract, but we all know 25 years ago, we didn't see that many $50 million contracts, but now in the state, there's all kinds of $50 million contracts for road construction, for any number of different projects. And so I see the $10 million figure as very reasonable, and with that, I support the amendment as well. And I recognize there are separation power claims, but those claims only become an issue if it stops us going forward with our business. So I think it's a good amendment.
Thank you, Senator Klayman. Further comments on Amendment Number 10 as amended? Seeing none, I will remove my objection. Is there further objection to Amendment Number 10, numbered B15? Seeing no further objections, Amendment B15 has been adopted as amended. That takes us to Amendment Number 11, numbered B14, made by Senator Wilikowski. Senator Wilikowski.
I will not be offering Amendment Number 11, Madam Chair.
Amendment Number 11 is not offered. That takes us to Amendment Number 12. It is numbered B1, made by Senator Wilikowski. Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move Amendment Number 12.
I'll object for purposes of discussion.
And this amendment I'm offering just for discussion purposes. I'd like to get this on the record, and I do intend to withdraw it. And I talked to the administration about this. And the concern that has been brought to my attention from people who have been following this issue is in Verra, which is the largest carbon registry company on Earth, has been engaged in a series of pretty significant legislation over what they call greenwashing. And buyers of weak carbon credits have been the subject of consumer lawsuits. Administrators of carbon credit programs could potentially be liable to buyers if the program does not meet their requirements. And what this amendment attempts to do is to prevent a situation like what is happening with Verra from happening here in Alaska. And if I could, Madam Chair, hear from the administration and their perspective on this and how they intend to deal with this issue of carbon leakage.
Ms. Miller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Senator Wilikowski. So the amendment addresses leakage. And leakage is generally this concept that your project doesn't actually stop emissions, but just moves them around. It can do that through, there can be market-based leakage and there can be activity-based leakage. The senator is correct. Verra is one of the registries that people can work through for projects. They have had some criticisms in these very, very large avoided deforestation projects in equatorial countries where the activity is really shifted to just a different part of land owned by that same kind of entity. And so there's been questions from buyers as to the integrity of some of those emission reductions in those credits. The registries that we're primarily focused with that deal largely with North America, and in particular with forestry, where leakage is more of a concern than in some other nature-based projects, accommodate for this concern of leakage by requiring a percentage of the credits generated by your project to be withheld by the registry as sort of a hedge against leakage. It's actually 30%. That's a significant amount, really, of the credits that are generated. That action has been sufficient to satisfy the buyer's concerns that these credits need to be real, they need to be legitimate, and they need to be protected against that kind of leakage. We do appreciate the sensibility and the intent behind the amendment, but the registry does have rules to accommodate this. In fact, it allows a very de minimis amount, knowing you need to manage land and there has to be some fluctuation. We can't actually control market leakage as the state, as the landowner. And again, feel very confident that the registries that we'll be working with on North American projects are going to accommodate leakage very well.
Senator Wilikowski.
With that, I'll withdraw Amendment Number 12, Madam Chair.
Amendment Number 12, numbered B1, has been withdrawn. That takes us back to Amendment Number 2, which is numbered B23. Senator Klayman, you were the offerer of that amendment.
So, Madam Chair, I would offer I'll call it a conceptual amendment, and I would add words in so that the amendment would now read, insert under a commission contract, so add the word commission in front of contract, under a commission contract in which a third party sells, markets, or otherwise facilitates a carbon offset project, and then after carbon offset project add the words for a percentage of the revenue generated, and comma, and then would continue the cost to the state of the, and then again insert the word commission contract. So the commission contract may not exceed 30% of the revenue generated by the carbon offset project. And I believe that those adding those words would make it very clear that this would only be a commission project. So if, as in my example, if the commission project was for the certification side and the sales was not for my commission contract, the 30% limit would only apply to the commission contract. And I would note, if this amendment is approved by this committee, I have full expectation the Finance Committee will give it a more detailed look when it gets to that level.
So I will object to this amendment, to the amendment, for purposes of a discussion. Is there discussion from committee members? Seeing none, I will remove my objection. Is there further objection to the amendment, to amendment number 2? Seeing none, amendment number 2, as amended, is adopted, and that is Bravo 23. I have no further amendments to Senate Bill 48. Are there further amendments? Seeing none, I will now look to Co-Chair Bishop for a motion.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move to report CS to Senate Bill 48, Work Order Number 33-GS1372/Bravo, as amended, out of the committee with individual recommendations, updated fiscal notes forthcoming. Legislative Legal has the authority to make any technical and conforming changes.
Is there objection to the motion? Seeing none, the bill will move from committee. Members, please stay to sign the transmittal document. I want to thank Senator Wilkowski and Senator Klayman for their work on this, on their amendments, and also call out the Senate Majority Legal Counsel, who I know worked very hard on these amendments. So while the document is being passed around, this will conclude our meeting for today. The next meeting will be Friday, May 5th at 3:30 p.m. On the agenda that day will be the first hearing of Senate Bill 137, Refined Fuel Surcharge. So with that, the meeting is adjourned. Let the record reflect the time is 5:01 p.m.